So hello.
Hi.
Peter McTravers, thanks for joining me here today at the DigiGov Expo for our podcast. How are you so far?
Really good. We've loved it. We had a great day yesterday. Lots of people at the stand. Really, really busy. Great story with the Cabinet Office as well. So yeah, we're really enjoying it.
Lovely. So we will definitely get into that. So Peter is the head of public sector at Celonis. So can you just briefly describe what does that entail?
So a lot of people don't know Celonis. We're actually the second largest pre-IPO in EMEA, one of the fastest growing software companies. We're actually German, which is a change. We've focused very much on our history. So people like BMW, Mercedes, a lot of supply chain, heavy yep. industry, Siemens. And so most other software companies do 30, 35, 40% of their revenue out of public sector. It's an area that's always a big consumer of software. And so my job basically entails reaching that goal, building out the go-to-market for Celonis in the public sector across central government predominantly.
Okay.
Working very closely with our partners. We have lots. We had a good partner day this week. We pulled together 40, 45 people, different partners who are keen on understanding Celonis and how we align with the government's priorities.
Yeah. So, yeah, I want to touch on those government priorities, really. So you've got a process and intelligence platform. And how does that directly align with the core mission of government, which is often about improving services, public services, of course,
yeah.
Increasing efficiency and sort of delivering better value for citizens?
Absolutely. So there's a few things, really. So the government's pretty mission focused. Number one is economic growth. And there's a big feeling around productivity in the public sector. I hate to say it, the number of civil servants has risen quite a lot. The productivity is generally plateauing. A lot of it is to do with too many, I think pretty much every vendor here is talking about too many siloed systems.
Yep.
The problem of spending over 50% of your IT spend on just keeping the legacy systems working rather than transforming and innovating like other organizations.
Yep.
So what we do is help accelerate the transformation. So fundamentally, we help people understand how their organizations work. What does it actually take to do a PIP application? How do we... how does the work flow through the organization? Where does it go? Where does it go wrong? And that directly aligns to the government's objectives. So if I give you an example, maybe.
Yes, please.
Elective recovery, the waiting list, probably top three in the Prime Minister's priorities currently. And what we've been able to do is understand the entire process. The moment a person goes to a GP, the GP needs to then refer them for an outpatient appointment. How does that actually work?
Mm.
You'd be surprised, NHS is probably one of the most data-rich organizations in the world,
yeah.
has huge volumes of data, but none of it is really acted upon and joined up. So what we're able to do is to join it up from the patient's perspective and understand exactly what happens. When does a GP send a letter? Who reads a GP that reads a letter? How long does it take? How does the appointment get set? What if they change the appointment? And then to cut to it, fundamentally, everyone knows about do not attends and problems in the NHS, and people may not realize approximately 10% of appointments aren't attended. So if you think there's 7.5 million people on a waiting list, then that's 750,000 appointments at least that could have been utilized.
Yeah.
So what we do is try and understand why people don't attend. And help them improve their processes to lower that number.
Okay.
And it's very interesting because what we do as a platform is we let the data talk for itself, so we don't have a hypothesis. Often people have got a perspective and what they think's driving it, whereas we let the data talk, and sometimes it's little things. We work for University Coventry. They found that they were sending people, you know, how everyone knows how long the NHS waiting list is, but sometimes people have been waiting 18 months for an appointment.
Mm.
Often they would forget they had it. And so people would be sent an SMS 48 hours before.
Yeah.
And then they would suddenly realize they couldn't make it and they'd try and change it. But that wouldn't give the NHS time to then find someone else to fill the appointment.
Mm,
so the appointment was wasted.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's fundamentally what we do. And I think that's why I joined Celonis, why I'm really enjoying the role, is that you can apply that to anything. NHS, we look at how do they optimize theatres. Theatres should be running at 85% capacity, a bit like a manufacturing plant.
Mm.
Often they're only at 70, 65%. People think we'll hire some more doctors, get a few more anaesthetists. It's actually nobody, there's no cleaners, so the operating theatres aren't being cleaned quick enough. There's no wheelchairs, there's not enough porters. So letting the data talk for itself. And then across the UK, we've applied it for any different use case. Traditionally, we do a lot in finance. So source to pay, the procurement processes, accounts payable, accounts receivable, all that sort of stuff. Network Rail, we work on the supply chain, managing 300,000 different parts across the rail maintenance network. We help them improve the maintenance of assets, predicting when things are going to fail. So basically, if you want your organization to work better, become more productive, then you need to understand what it's doing before you start impacting change and buying new software. And
definitely,
that's our pitch.
Yeah, yeah. Find the data, then see where you can sort of change based off that. And I've seen as well that Celonis, the process intelligence platform, you can try for free as well. So is that right? Is something if public sector organizations were interested and listening, they could give it a whirl and see what's going on first?
Yes, so we have a quite a unique contract with the Cabinet Office out of their shared service centre. And as part of, I think most people in the public sector are aware of the shared service clusters that have been created.
Yep.
As part of that, they've wanted to invest in a technology to help them understand the processes before they start creating these new processes and new clusters. So we have an arrangement where we co-invest. So if there's a part of government that would like to understand the technology on their own data and solve certain problems, then we run it jointly. Cabinet Office have a lot of expertise on running these sort of proof of concepts. More importantly as well, they also have the relationships with the DPIA and the famous paperwork that we have to do in public sector to actually get the data. But what it means is we're running these sort of engagements. Ben, who was there yesterday, was talking about the first two that we've run are one around a recruitment process, actually just trying to speed up the time it takes to hire people, and then look at the dropout, everything from, you know, how long it takes to get a contract, and it kind of leads to the other one we've been working on. Anyone in public sector has probably had to wait for their security clearance, which can be hugely complicated. So we were analysing those processes. We found, for example, that over 40,000 cases, there was 39,000 different ways that the case had progressed through the organisation, through different systems, different people.
Wow.
And that's the sort of thing that means that it's 230 odd days for your security clearance for your top level one. So again, little changes like moving to DocuSign for communicating with doctors saves huge amount of time.
So some of those inefficiencies Celonis is looking to try and solve, and also money saving, so time saving, money saving, they're the real two big hitters. Are there any sort of other common inefficiencies you see across different public sector organizations, from, I guess, onboarding new civil servants that you just mentioned, or managing shared services on a broader aspect?
Yeah, it's quite interesting really, because it's the overall theme is kind of time or money that we save, like most software. But there's a lot of benefits around standardization, lowering the cost of management, and also adherence. So it's quite a dry subject, but if you are understanding where your processes are failing, then you can build out a better practice. We have a lot of ability to help you design your processes and then check in real time if they've been adhered to or not. So particularly with the shared service and new clusters, you've got 400 odd departments going down to five different processes, and everyone wants to run things differently. So we can, when the systems are deployed, make sure that people are adhering to them.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that we can do, which is increasingly popular for us, is we can help improve your processes. So if we identify failings, we can trigger work, we can do orchestration, and then I have to mention it, of course, that AI contractually obligated to.
I was waiting for
I've done very well, actually.
Yes, has it been a few minutes?
Yeah, exactly. Not many software companies go that long without mentioning AI at the moment. But what we do is we really help the deployment of AI agents.
Okay.
So everybody's deploying AI, and I've been selling AI and machine learning, chatbots, all that sort of stuff for a very long time. And the number one thing is the data, but it's not just connecting it to the data, it's giving the AI contextual understanding.
Yep.
So if you think about an AI agent, you know, the sales pitch is amazing. It's going to be a human, it's just going to figure everything out, go off, solve all the problems.
Right. Yep.
To a point, that's true, but is it really going to know what steps it takes to order something in your procurement process? Will it know how to pay an invoice? Will it know how to do a disability application? Probably not. You'll probably spend a lot of time teaching it.
So maybe not yet.
Exactly.
But soon we'll probably
well,
be there, right?
Well, soon probably, but I still think if you look at most people's data, then it's completely incomprehensible. If you ever looked at an SAP table or an Oracle table, then it doesn't make any sense. So no matter how smart the agent is, it's going to be struggling to pin all that together. So someone's right. going to basically have to program, if you want to do something, here's the code, here's the structure. And so that's where we fit in, is we're almost like with a context, with a business understanding. We're the equivalent of the agent sitting down with someone who's worked in the organization for a long time and knows how it works. You know, go and ask Janice if you want to do this. The way the work flows through in reality is all documented on our systems. So what that actually means is if you're deploying something like Copilot, which a lot of the central government is, then the deployment is going to be so much faster because it's going to have a lot more intelligence and understanding of your context. But also we can manage it, we can report on it, and we can deal with all the metrics and the understanding of how successful they're being as well.
Yeah, so a lot of people have talked quite generally, not just in the public sector, but more broadly within the AI landscape of 2025 being AI in its agentic era. We've heard a lot about AI agents today at the show, and the AI theatre is right opposite the Salonis stand. So I guess from your perspective, where are we with agents and where could we get?
I think we're nowhere, most particularly in the public sector. I think there's an awful lot of people talking about it. But if you think about some of the inefficiency problems that we come across, installing an agent is probably 5 years down the roadmap of some of the things that you should possibly be solving first.
Yeah.
In our private sector, customers are a lot further ahead. They're running operations. They're having a kind of self-healing organization. So it's probably, you break the question into two parts. The technology's there. We've got a lot of customers deploying it. It's very easy to do, but our organization's mature enough to actually do it and be able to take the power that the agents offer.
Yeah, definitely. And we've spoken about today the McKinsey research that suggests that I think around 95% of AI projects fail. Can you explain potentially why so many AI projects fail and then where Salonis comes in on that?
Well, I think, like I say, I've been selling software for a very long time, and it's almost we call it the CEO and the golf course problem, with back when web chat was a big thing, and then chat agents and chatbots and all that sort of stuff. If anyone's ever used chatbot for any of the companies they engage with, it has no intelligence. It can't answer half the questions. You can't talk to you have to go and talk to a human to get anything done.
Yep.
Has no understanding of you. Doesn't know anything about the orders you placed or what your favorite product is. They're pretty dumb technology, and I think Gen AI is no different. Unless someone is giving it all of the context, then the usability is going to be really low, and in reality, it's just going to drop off. Copilot, ChatGPT is amazing in your personal life, but it's not very useful during your corporate life unless it understands all of your data sources and the context.
Yes, definitely. So what's next for Salonis? What's coming up? Are there any projects that you're really excited about? Maybe you can't mention them right now, but over the next year or so, what's Salonis look to tackle? I know you mentioned you've got the case study with the NHS in terms of reducing waiting lists. Are there any other big projects that's on the horizon?
Yeah, so I think the shared service strategy is probably very exciting for us. We're heavily involved in that. I think just the opportunity to improve the service that's given to civil servants and also lower some of the cost base is huge for us.
Yep.
Looking to expand our NHS work because it's probably a similar issue in central government, is that we struggle with the federated nature of the UK civil service and that we spend a lot of time filling in the same paperwork that we filled in for one department that is the same for the other. We're doing exactly the same thing. So there's a lot of exciting work going on around centralizing that and making it faster to deploy. Because you hear, I forgot his name, the previous minister of DSIT saying... Peter Carl was talking at Tech UK and saying, crack on, ask for forgiveness. And then it's completely opposite when we actually talk to anyone. So, we're looking at going faster and having more pre-built applications and delivering the value.
So would you say that's the biggest barrier for public sector organizations working with Salonis? It's more like the red tape, the paperwork?
I think there's red tape, and paperwork is probably one of the biggest challenges, because people think immediately no. And, in the current environment with hacking and, some of the data losses that the government's had, you can't really blame them. But the flip side is we're running highly secure data. We've got patient data in it across NHS, across a lot of, all patient journeys. We've got security vetting data in our system. So the platform is very secure and we abide by all the various standards. But I think probably the other challenge is it's a sort of product that you need to invest time in and you've got to transform, because we are fantastic at showing areas that we can help you, that we can, you know, value, that you can prove out. We can calculate it. We can tell you the savings. But someone's actually got to go and make the change. Mm. So you need to drive it through the organization. You need executive sponsorship. And I mean, at our one of our NHS customers, the CEO is personally pushing through the insight that we're finding and the changes that are coming off the back of it. And in the terms of a £3 billion a year trust, we are a tiny, tiny little speck. Mm. But it's because of the impact we make and the visibility it gives him.
And the value of the insight.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the, you know, when we engage with the Cabinet Office, that's our ask. We need the right level of sponsorship. Mm. We need people to start making changes on this. Otherwise, we're just singing into the wind, really. We're finding all this insight and nobody's doing anything.
I'm glad you said singing into the wind there. Cause
yes, I did check myself.
Yeah, very kind of you. So if I was an IT manager or a director of IT at a central government department, what's one key concrete thing I could do after listening to this that's going to remove some of those inefficiencies, remove some of that time waste or that money waste, and how can Celonis come into that?
So I think time to value is really important to us. So we can, it's a blessing and a curse in that we can solve any problem, we can optimize anything, but we have a lot of pre-built quick start packs effectively. So things like accounts payable, source to pay, procurement, all that sort of stuff. It's all there, pre-built connectors into all your applications, pre-built dashboards, pre-built actions, which will solve a lot of issues. So if you work with us in the Cabinet Office, we can find one or two process areas that we can deliver value really, really quickly, and then we can move on and start some of the more difficult sort of out there problems.
Perfect. Yeah, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to sit with me and let me pick your brain. I really appreciate, obviously, Celonis is supporting the event, and we look forward to having Celonis back next year at the DigiGov Expo 2026 in the XL, in similar dates in September, on the 23rd and 24th of September. So, Peter, before we finish, do you have any final words?
No, just thanks for the opportunity, really. We'll be back next year, a bigger stage, I think, we need from the amount of interest we've had. But thank you for having us.
Perfect. Lovely. Thank you for your time. Cheers.
Thank you.